The following presentation was recorded live by HAudio.com.
I want you to know that there's a mitzvah, everybody knows it, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, the Kaddish Shmoy. When all the Kuyu Gidl on the Kuyu, there's one of the Tayak mitzvahs, the Kaddish Shmoy. The mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is really the only mitzvah, maybe we'll be Mechalko, but it's the only mitzvah that you're Kuyu, but to be Meisim Nefesh. The Chiyuv of the Siris Nefesh, of Mamish, to be, give your life, to give your life, is not to be Yoyver on, like Sir Tzachon, but all right, we'll have to discuss it in Halacha, whether you'll agree with me or not. Yeah. But the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, everybody knows, is Afila, Rakti Desana, or L'chol HaPochus, everybody knows that in front of Asorim Yisrael, even if they ask you to be Yoyver on Chazer, which is Avadik Chaybohem, but in order to be Mekadish Shmoy, you have to give your life. The 10 Jews shouldn't think that what? That you're afraid to die. That you're willing to be over the Watson Hashem in order to save your life. That's a Chilul Hashem. And if on the other hand, they know that you're willing to die in order to be Mekayim the Watson Hashem, not to be over on one of the mitzvahs of the Rebbeinu Shalom, then you're Mekadish Shmoy. So what will happen? The 10 Jews will be more strong in believing that there's a Rebbeinu Shalom. 10 Jews will know a little better that the Rotzen Hashem is above Afila, the living itself. A little better they'll know. Will they become Fumayidin because of it? Lav Davka. 10 Jews, Afila, not religious Jews. And if they're Maminim, so what will happen? So for a moment they'll have more Amunah. They'll be stronger. Does that mean that they will be Meisa Nefesh? But this is a chiyuv that we have to show 10 Jews, in order to show 10 Jews that's Kiddush Hashem Barabim, I have to be willing to die. So if you take a Jew who thinks that there is no God, or a Jew who thinks that the Rebbeinu Shalom didn't give mitzvahs bechlal, and you introduce him to the Rebbeinu Shalom, you introduce him to the concept of mitzvahs, you introduce him to the fact that there's a Torah Misinai, that's Onashir Lamala in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. You understand that? Now I want you to know that in the Rambam, the mitzvah of the Kiddush Hashem in the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam says that the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is Lefarsein HaMuna HaMitis B'chol Oilam Kuloi. The mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is Poshet, that we have to go around telling the whole world, Asafarana Rabbeinu Shel Oilam, that there's a Torah, the whole world, Abayid. Jews? It's a chiyuv That's our chiyuv. And the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is mechayiv afil limsor es nafsha. You have to be willing to die. You have to be willing to die of chil Hashem, of Kiddush Hashem. So here, you're living in a generation where the chil Hashem is oyim v'noyim. Where every day they're slandering Tira, they're slandering Kaviyoch, the Rebbeinu Shalom, they're slandering Am Yisrael. We have to do, if you stand still, it's Chil Hashem. But there is another prat in Chil Hashem that I think you got to appreciate. In Chil Hashem is also taken in the halachas of Chil Hashem and of Kiddush Hashem, is that if a Ben Tira steals, or if a Jew steals, it's called Chil Hashem. Why? Because they say, look at the Jews. And if a Ben Tira, if a Talmud Chochem, move up, he doesn't pay the butcher bill immediately, it's called a Chil Hashem, because you see what Tira does? Nothing. So if a man who's learning to Reseinu Akdesha, the Dvar Hashem, if he feels he can't talk to a guy who's a poyer, he's got a PhD in philosophia. You don't see that, it's Chil Hashem. What are we learning? We're learning Dvar Hashem. If he can touch us and he doesn't get the shock of Teres Chaim, that's a Chil Hashem. On the other hand, if we talk to him and we give him a little bit of a shock of Teres Chaim, that's Kiddush Hashem. He says, oh, Seferan Episto, there's a Teres. There's something alive. There's something alive that's got electric in it. Watch it. It's a buzzsaw.
It's a buzzsaw, even if you don't convince him. But he knows as you talk, Torah has teeth. And Torah teaches us to have teeth. So this is our obligation. You've got to learn, and I say, if you're serious, please, write down, make notes. Go over it, discuss it. But if you find something that you think is oivel asicha, you think that you can deliver the message, then try it out. Try it out. It's a chiyuv. Okay, now again, I'm talking a little bit about the how and the mitzvah of teichocha. The mitzvah of teichocha, I told you, is lohichiach, is to show them. To show them. So one of the things we spoke about last night is that you have to say, I'm your friend, I'm on your side, and you have to mean it. You have to be talking to help another human being. As if he cut his arm, you'll help him. You'll help him if he cut his arm. Nebuchadnezzar that doesn't know that there's a Rabbeinu Shalom, that he has a Sheirish, that there's a Teirah, that the Rabbeinu Shalom is a Teirish minute, that there's a Olam Haba. So, what's a cut arm? Nothing. Help him. So you have to put yourself into that feeling, and you have to mean it. But another thing that you have to be very cautious about is don't turn them off. Don't turn them off. And one of the things that turns people off that you're not going to succeed is if you say, I'll prove it to you. If you dare them. If you confront them. If you confront them, we know how hard it is to be a Moedal Emes. We have our experience in learning how hard it is if you say a Chiddush and somebody confronts you and says, I am Moedal Emes and say, you know, you're right. You know how hard it is? Everybody here knows how hard it is. Yeah. So what do you want him to be a goyim and then say, you know, right, I chug a plated. We know that you got to be a meidal emes. We know that emes is al hakol. And we find it very difficult. So if you challenge someone and you say, I'm going to prove it to you, I'm going to show you, so his gaiva is on the line. His gaiva is on the line. You want him to be a meidal emes al kochoy. Don't do it. Stay away from it completely. You stay away from it, then you have a chance. So anytime you get into a confrontation, move off to a different subject. Now there is in Chochmah, a fella says, I'm an atheist, he's confronting you. There's a way of getting him out of a confrontation if he says it to you, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in that nonsense. You know, that annoys us. Now we're going to give proofs of God this evening, a couple of them. Yeah. Then we'll go into proofs of Torah Misinai tomorrow night. But tonight we'll talk about proofs of God. So if a fellow says, look, I don't believe in that nonsense, I don't believe in God, I'm an atheist, if you tell him, listen, buddy, I'll prove it to you, you're wasting your breath. You've killed the evening. You've killed the evening. Even if you get him down on the floor and you twist his arm behind him and you show him logically and you go step by step, all that you'll succeed in doing is, he'll say, okay, all right, you proved it. I still don't believe it. And even if he says, okay, you proved it, when he goes outside, he'll say, watch out for a yeshiva guy, which is also, it's a hesed, yeah? But he'll say they're fanatics, they won't let you rest, they want to argue. That's the impression he'll go away with. Because to be a meidal emes is oyim v'noyim, and don't expect them to do it. So with chochmah, you can turn it around. How do you turn it around? You use a straw man. When a fella comes into us, and he says, I'm an atheist. We don't confront him, but we use a straw man. You know what a straw man is? You let him save his face. He didn't say anything. You pretend he didn't say anything. He knows he said it. You know he said it. Doesn't matter. You just ignore it. This is the Metzias Adam. You ignore it. You say, hey, you know what I say to an atheist? We have a way. We talk to an atheist. You know what I say to an atheist? I say, I'm thrilled to meet you. I'm thrilled to meet you. Because an atheist, and now you can define it. You see, an atheist means a man who knows that there is no God. And if you know, it means that you have evidence. How can you know? You know from the law. You know, you have some evidence. I'm looking for such evidence. I've been looking for an atheist the last 30 years. Maybe you can give me some evidence, please. I'm thrilled to meet you. Now, you go on. The atheist, the so-called atheist, he changes his mind. He doesn't have any atheist. He doesn't have any evidence. So he says, well, really what I meant to say is, I'm an agnostic. I didn't mean an atheist, I meant an agnostic. So again, we say to him, I'm thrilled to meet you. Now, in the meantime, the fellow who just said he's an atheist, he keeps quiet, and he says, gee, he's a nice guy. He didn't give it to me over the head, right? He becomes a friend of yours. In the meantime, this guy just said he's an atheist, and you're beating up a straw man, yeah? And he's very thankful that you didn't put him on the griddle. If you would say to him, you're an atheist, where's your evidence? Then he'll say, you got to prove that there's a God. He's going to switch it around. But if you use a straw man, a false, a dummy, and you beat him up in front of him, he'll be very happy that you haven't attacked him. Grateful he'll be to you. So you say, so the guy who came in saying he's an atheist, he says, I'm an agnostic. Oh, I made a mistake. Really, I meant to say I'm an agnostic. Always say an agnostic, disappointed. If you find an atheist around, please send them to me. I'm still looking for an atheist. But an agnostic, that's second best. You know, an agnostic is nicht schlecht. Not bad, not bad. Thrilled to meet you. An agnostic is a fellow who has proven, he knows, define it. He knows that we can't know that there's a God. Otherwise, what are you saying? You're agnostic. Agnostic means a guy who knows that it's impossible to have any evidence that there's a God. It's impossible to know. So if you know, if you've made a decision that it's impossible to know, you must have some evidence of your own. That it's impossible. You can prove it. You can show. It's impossible to know God. Huh. Thrill. I'd love to hear such evidence. Would you please show me such evidence? Now this poor fellow, he doesn't have any evidence. He was just shooting off his mouth, right? So he says, well, pardon me, really what I meant to say is, I don't know that there's a God. Oh, you say. Now you have to define it for him. You say, oh, I see. What you really meant to say is you don't know. What you meant to say is that you're ignorant. Come in and we'll show you some evidence of God's existence. Now the point over here is that the fellow who walks in saying he's an atheist, that same guy, he said he's an atheist, he'll keep quiet during this whole talk. But in his mind, he's going through these steps. He'll say, yeah, I didn't mean an atheist, I meant an agnostic. Well, I didn't mean agnostic, I meant that I don't know. Oh, I meant I'm ignorant. He'll be so grateful that you didn't push him to the wall, that he'll say, you mean to say that there is evidence that there's a God? And he say, yeah. He says, can I hear it? It works. That's with Chochmah, with leading him around. With leading him around and letting him save face. You heard the term, saving face. That you don't embarrass him. You let a straw man take the blows.
If you're there with him at the same time, and there's nobody else there, so who are you talking to here?
You tell him, you know what I say to an atheist? You tell him, you don't explain all that I've explained this time. You say to him, you know, he walks in, he says he's an atheist. You say, hey, you know what we say to an atheist? We say to this guy, you're an atheist, thrilled to meet you. And you go through the whole thing, thrilled to meet you. You mean that you have evidence that there is no God and that's an atheist? So the guy changes his mind and he says, really what I meant to say, I'm an agnostic. So we say, oh, an agnostic, disappointed. Well, but an agnostic, that's second best. You just tell him the story. You tell him the story, but you don't put him on the fire. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. So the idea is don't embarrass the guy. Don't confront him. Don't dare him. Don't challenge him. Because if you challenge him, he's on a debating team. And who's ever lost a debate? Did you ever see these guys on a debating team? Did you ever see the guy say, you know what, you convinced me? You find a svarahin, you give a dreya hair, you know what you do. Yeah, we've done it ourselves. Every human being has found the time when he knew he was wrong and he would like to have admitted it, obahakanet. Yeah, we've all gone through that, right? I mean, what am I going to say? Yeah, I made a mistake. I'd like to get off this embarrassing position that I took, but what am I going to say? Yeah. So don't put him into that situation. Now, B of this is that, remember, this is called in the category of chaim, awareness. Let him know what's going on. He's walking around and they actually believe, they think, they have this illusion that they are atheists, full-fledged atheists. I am an atheist. Yeah, and they can be very proud of it. And they don't even know what they're talking about. They don't even know what they're talking about. They've never even decided the issue. They just picked it up from their from their environment one time or another. They contradicted somebody who said that there's a God, and they have adopted a position. So Chaim is, bring him to awareness. Let him know what's going on. An atheist means you have evidence. What's the evidence? That's Chaim. So B of Chaim is that you got to get people bechlal aware of where their opinions are coming from. You've got to get people bechlal in general. You have to teach them to become aware of where their opinions are coming from and that they are a product of their society. They're walking around thinking their opinion of Am Yisrael, their opinion of Torah, their opinion of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, their opinion of truth and relative truth and tolerance and humanity and the whole business, this is their hasogis. They have worked it through, and that's my position. So you want to undo that, because if you don't undo that, then you're talking to them, you're tackling, he's a zombie. He's walking around with the society's values. He picked it up, he's an Americana. He values what Americans value. He has his definitions of what Americans are, and they'll always pop up. They'll always come popping up. So what you have to do, be of Chaim, of awareness, and it's very essential, is that you have to tell him, look, my friend, we all know, and he knows too. You appeal to his awareness. Toichocha, loichiach, show him. We all know that unless we investigate, unless we get the facts, we seek the evidence, and we judge the evidence, and we come to our own conclusions, our opinion upon any particular subject is a product of our society. Does that make sense? You think about it for a while. Check it out yourself. Unless you find out for yourself, you get the information, you weigh it out, you're a dayan, you're a judge, you weigh it out, and you make your own opinion, your opinion on any particular subject is a product of your society. 100% will agree with you. Try it. 100% will agree with you. So then you take them a step further and you illustrate it to make it live. To make it live. You say, look, if we were born in Red China, you and me, yeah? If we were born in Red China, most probably we'd be waving a little red book of Mao's wise sayings. If we were born in China and they brought us up in China, then we would go along, you know, we'd say, Mao, yeah? He agrees with you. Sure, born in China, all these Chinese, I mean, what are you different? Sure. Unless we investigate, we find out who Mao is, we try some of his wise sayings and they boomerang on us, we start thinking about it, then Mao, yeah? We find out Mao is a murderer, Mao, so you find out differently. But otherwise, most probably, we'd be waving a little red book of Mao's wise sayings. Everybody will agree with you. So you take him a step further and you say, listen, if you were born in voodoo land in Haiti, most probably we would be waving voodoo pins. Yeah. Haiti, you know, that's what they bring you up. Watch out, the voodoo dolls, you know, they're getting you. Yeah, you better take defensive measures, get in first. You know. Sure, unless we investigate, unless we think things through and we know what life is about, we'd be waving voodoo pins. He'll agree with you. You say, you know what? If we were born in Meir Shearim, most probably, we'd be waving our tzitzis, right? You and me, you know, you Americana. You American Jew, you. If you were born in Meir Shearim, you'd be waving your tzitzis, right? He agrees with you. So I'll tell you say, you were born in the United States of America. We were born in the United States of America. You know what? Most probably, we're waving Americanisms. Isn't that right? Sure, he agrees with you. Why not? Right? Obvious. Okay, so you're telling, you know, that doesn't mean we're right any more than if we were born in Red China or in Voodoo Land or in Meir Shearim. He agrees with you. He says, you know, one of the Americanisms is, what do you think of that Bible? Fundamental literature, huh? On what basis? Where'd you get that opinion? Did you get the evidence? What do you think about God? What do you think about Judaism? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Time magazine, right? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That's Judaism, yeah? We have We have a commandment. I mean, I don't think you guys, you read the Time magazine, I don't know, but in the Time magazine, it comes out that one of the Tayag mitzvahs is tikkun, take revenge. It's one of the Tayag mitzvahs, you know. Most probably it's from the Aseres HaDibris, you know. Take revenge. Yeah, they don't know that we have loisi tikkun. They don't know about it. So these kids growing up, they feel that Amamish, there's one of the mitzvahs is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If somebody touches you, then you touch them back. You know, good Americanism, yeah? You punch me, I push you, you know? Yeah. And they figure it comes from the Jews. Yeah. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's from the Goyim. That's from the Goyim. But what do the Jews have? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So you confront him with him. What is your opinion of Judaism? What is your opinion of Torah? A person who believes in Torah, what is he, a fundamentalist? Yeah. Where'd you come to these conclusions? And you show him that he came to this conclusion. Where did he come from to this conclusion? Because he's an American. He was born in the United States of America and he picked it up. So you say to him, look, you know that in your heart you want to be a fair man. And he'll agree, he wants to be fair. You're with him. He wants to be fair. So you say the first thing everybody will agree in, you don't make any decisions without getting the evidence. Come in, let us show you the evidence, what it is about. Don't come to any conclusions without investigating. First, get the evidence. Know the Torah from our point of view, and then you can decide. That's fair. And you want to be fair. But what you've done is you've made him aware that he has swallowed a lot of poison about Torah, and that's a fact. You know it's a fact. He's a tinik shenishba. He's a tinik shenishba. He was brought up amongst the goyim. He swallowed a lot of poison. You've got to make him aware of the fact that he swallowed a lot of poison. That's poison that he's taken. And that he should investigate and get a hold of the facts. See of this is that the most important particular thing that you got to deprogram, that he's been programmed, and that is affecting our yeshiva light too, because Odom Nimshach Achri Sviva V'Zahalocha. This concept that if you were born in Red China, you're affected by being amongst the Red Chinese is a halocha. Odom Nimshach Achri Sviva. That's why you should avoid the Sviva of Rishoyim and go in Sviva of Tzadikim. Odom Nimshach Achri Sviva. That's the halocha. Unless you're mevarer and you stand up and you clarify, then it creeps into you. And women's liberation is creeping into our olam. And the concept that divorce is something that can happen is creeping into our olam. We know that from the Sviva. It's from the Sviva. And the fact that you can watch people being killed and you don't lift a finger is from the Sviva. Complacency is from the Sviva. It's not a Jewish thing. It's not Torah. In the Torah Midbar, they didn't have complacency. They stood up to be counted, one way or another. A lot of times, the wrong way. Yeah, they stand up for Korach. They say, to Moshe Rabbeinu, Atam Amisam Asam Hashem. Stand up, Torah tells you, stand up, Leisamen Odam Leacha, stand up. But here we are in America, and it teaches us complacency. Vusam and Torn, you know, there's too many problems. What can we do? But one of the main things that is the Makkah of this generation, the Makkah of this generation, and all of us know it, is relativism. There is no absolute truth. Every kid who comes through, there's one yadiyah that he knows, yeah? One thing that he knows. You tell him, look, I'll prove to you that there's a God. He says, you're an absolutist. I say, yes, I'm an absolutist. He says, don't you know there is no absolute truth? It's okay for you, but for me, I don't believe in God. You never heard that? It's prevalent. It's all over, and it creeps into our bones. When I was a young man, and I learned, I remember even in Chaim Balim, which was a long, long time ago, if you showed a guy a halacha, you showed him a medrash, you showed him a chazal, and they weren't that frum those days, they weren't that frum, but he said, wow, he has to deal with it. He didn't say, there's mistam a chazal fakel. He didn't say, mistam there's a posik that says otherwise, yeah. There was no such thing. As a state, you had to knock your brains out. Vos mentus. How can it be? Right or wrong? There's no stiris in Chazal. There's a Chazal fakert, there's a halacha fakert, there's a pesik fakert. There's one psak, there's one halacha. There's no relativism in Torah. No relativism. The Rabbeinu Shalom is loud and clear. But these kids come in and they say, okay, so that's okay for you. But I have my truth. You have your truth and he has his truth and he has his truth. Ad kedei kach, that I'm telling you that I've heard from Jewish kids in the last couple of years, it used to be enough, you'd say to them, so you mean that Hitler was right because he was sincere and he meant it. He thought he was helping the whole world by getting rid of the Jews. So he was right from his point of view. It used to be, you said that, it gave a guy a shock. Today, a Jewish kid will tell you, yes, Hitler was right from his point of view. He was sincere. He meant it. Imagine that. Oyim v'neira. So you've got to undo this. Now you've got to be diplomatic about it. And you've got to put it at the end of this game. If you were born in Red China, if you were born in Voodoo Land, if you were born in a good Catholic family in Italy, if you were born in Meir Shearim, you were born in the United States. And one of the things that they teach you in the United States is there's no absolute truth. So we like to play a game with him. We say to him, a guy says to me, there's no absolute truth. There is no absolute truth. We say to them, are you sure of that? And he says, sure, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. That's a joke. That's to loosen them up. Yeah, that doesn't convince them. They'll laugh too. Yeah. They see that there's something a little weird about being absolutely sure that there is no absolutely sure. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. It doesn't in any way affect them. There's a way of dealing with all mishugas. Yeah. But at least you've opened them up a little bit. So you tell them, look, my friend, please, tell me. Investigate for yourself. You have to go after saying, you have to investigate and get the evidence for yourself. And then you tell them, let's investigate, let's check it out for ourselves, right? Let's check, let's think for ourselves. Do you tell me that you can actually believe? Can you believe that if I say that there is a God, so then God springs into being and he starts creation all over again. And when that atheist says there is no God, so God disappears. What do you mean there is no absolute truth? Define it. What does that mean? I say there's a God, there's God. He says no, disappears. Goes on and off like a neon light. And what if we say at the same moment, God, no. What happens? Half God? What do you mean there's no absolute truth? I say that there's a heaven and hell. Now, if I'm mistaken, when I get upstairs and I open up, when I die, they open up a section of heaven because I said, I know that there's a heaven and there's a hell, so they open up a section because I know. And because you say there's no such place, so what happens? They close it down when you get up there and they're dragging you off. You say, not me, that's him, that's... That's ridiculous. Either there is or there isn't. You know that that is true.
How does he know that there's anything? Possibly not to say that he's not agnostic, he doesn't know. It's very possible to say there is nothing afterwards. That's a separate thing you have to convince him. If you're telling him, you're going with the basic understanding, there is a heaven and there is a hell. First you have to prove that there is such a thing.
No, I don't think that we said that. I said that there is, either there is or there isn't. It's not for me different than it is for you. And that is an important first step that you have to get in. Because with all your proofs, et cetera, he'll say, but it's not relevant to me. It sounds crazy, but you've got to make that point. You've got to make that point. You've got to get it across. It doesn't have to be the first point you bring up. But if you see that there's a schizophrenia amongst them, you've got to take it home and straighten that out, that there's an absolute truth is the same for all human beings. Do you understand? And that's the second step. What's the evidence? Whether there is or there isn't. That's the second step. But to say that it doesn't matter, you go your opinion, I go my opinion. No. Either there is or there isn't. Okay, D of this is the most important misunderstanding. The most important misunderstanding of Torah that you got to remove from them and you got to remove from yourself because it gets into us. Adam nimshach achri sviva. The most important misunderstanding of Torah and of Yiddishkeit is that it's ritual that it's depriving man of living, that it's binding, that it's not related to enjoying this life. That's a misunderstanding. And you've got to remove it. And if you think that it's so, they got you. They got you. Because the Rabbi Yisroel says, Nachamo, Re'ei, Ani Noisen Lefneichem Ayon, Brocho, Voyim Shemayetishmu, V'nasati Metal, Tzichem Be'itoi. Rabbi Yisroel says, Eitz Chaim Hi, what do you want? Rabbi Yisroel, it's his world. He gave it to us. Hashemayim, Shemayim, La'ashem, V'os Nosen Lefnei Yodom. Get that straight. Rabbi Yisroel says, Re'ei, Ani Noisen Lefneichem Ayon, Esa Chaim, Esa Moves. We have Chaim. They have mothers. Without the Torah, it's only mothers. Without the Torah, it's only barrenness. Yeah, they look like they're enjoying, they're slopping it over, it's barrenness. They have nothing. We have Torah, we have Chaim. But they go around thinking that when you go into a yeshiva, you become a religious Jew, you're giving up everything. You'll be giving up. You know what you're giving up? What's on their minds? Yeah, you're giving it up, right? You're giving up materialism. How you can't enjoy swimming anymore? If you're an elachayid, ice cream, but you don't taste it. You become zombies. You become like a stone. Yeah, you have to assure them. You know, when I eat ice cream, I enjoy it. Otherwise, they look at you. You're a religious Jew. You don't enjoy ice cream. You're out of it. You're a zombie. This is what they are afraid of, and this is standing in the way. So what you have to get across, and it's a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, is that you tell them that we say, Avinu Avarachamon, it's our Father in heaven, and He rules this earth, and He made the earth for me. For you too. But He made Ishvili Nivra Olam, Erech Tov Omer. A good guest says, the Chazal say, Kol ma sheheichna balabayit lo heichna ela bishvili. Bishvili nivra olam. How much did He give me? The Rebbe Yisrael made this whole world for me. That's our chiyuv. The whole world. He didn't leave anything out. It's only for me. Do you understand that? Azoy state. A Mishnah in Sanhedrin chayev adam loyma bishvili nivra olam. Royo lo adam loyma bishvili nivra olam. This is the Rebbe Yisrael is my tate. He has koiches the whole olam. He created for me. I him? No. Rabbi Yisroel can give me a world and him a world. There's no piker. The Mitzrim had choshech and we had all. Same time, same place. We had all, they had choshech. But as Zoy Shteyten Chazal, Bishvili Nivra Olam, a man is mechuyif to say this, and he's mechuyif to be makir toiv to Rabbi Yisroel for a whole olam. Oirich toiv, I'm a kol ma sheheichem balabayis, lo heichem elu bishvili. Whatever the balabayis made, all of this, He only made for me. He made a beautiful day, not for all the millions of people, but for me. For me. The highway for me. Is that emes? Bimachli. That's the emes. So you've got to teach them. You can't tell them, that's too complicated. But you tell them that, look, you're a Jew. Did you ever look into a Jewish prayer book? We say, Avinu Avarachamon. And that means our Father, the Merciful Father. Now, if you had children, what do you want for your children? What do you want for your children? Everything good, all the blessings in this world, long life, accomplishment. Everything good, is that right? And he'll tell you, sure, that's right. So you say, friend, this is what we say in our prayers. Our Father, the Merciful Father, means that He's kinder to us than you can be to your children or than I can be to my children. He's kinder. And this is what Judaism teaches us. Olam chesed yibonet. The Rabbi Yisroel created us lehetiv. Derech ha-toiv lehetiv. We all know this, but we got to get it into our bones. And we got to project it to them. And what's our Torah? The Torah is Torah's Chaim. The Rabbi Yisroel says, see my children, I'll teach you how to enjoy these blessings. I'll teach you how to appreciate them. And we spoke last night, happiness, Sameach Bechelkoi, is the first step in appreciating it. You have to work hard at saying, Maidani Lefanecho, with a little nachas, a little pleasure, that I'm alive. A little nachas in being alive. Not, all right, another day, I got to go to Davin and I. All right, we're going to start learning again. Yeah. We'll get to Olam Haba, right? Oh. No, we have to be Samer B'chaga, we have to appreciate Matov Chalkeinu, Ashreinu, Matov Chalkeinu. Atreva Amiti, Achashalti Meisa Hashem, Oisa Avake, Shifti B'Veisa Hashem, Ko Yemei Chayai, Ki Rak Zehu Atov. V'chol Zehu Zeh, Sheyachshivu B'nei Yodim Atov, Ein Ela Hevo V'Shevnet. This is Tov, this is good, this is the Mechaya, this is what people are looking for. You've got to understand it yourself. Teire is Teire is Chayim. The Rabbi Yisrael says, "Re'ei ani noisim v'neichem brocha uklola," and you've got to tell it to them. That's what it is. It's the instructions. They think the law, the law, the law. That's the way they look. The law. You tell them, "Look, friend. There's a word for law. It's called chukim. Torah. We call it Torah. Torah is instructions. There's driving instructions. Torah means literally instruction." There's driving instructions, there's cooking instructions. The Rebbe Shalom didn't give us driving instructions, he didn't give us cooking instructions. He gave us Teiras Chaim. We call it the Teiras Chaim. He gave us instructions for living. Everything you got to know about living. Everything you got to know about living. So if you get that across, you tell him, listen, friend. Everybody knows that this world, you look into yourself and you know that this world is a beautiful world. It's a pleasure world. Where human beings haven't been around to pollute it, when you find a little stretch of beach where human beings haven't been around in the ocean with the scum and this, it's mamish, a piece of nachas. Ah, it's beautiful. You go to a forest where human beings haven't been around and you stand there and you look, if you find the butts and you see the broken potato, then it's disgusting. But where human beings haven't been around to make a mess out of it, it's a gorgeous world. We all appreciate it. But you tell him, listen, like everything else in this world, if you give a man a refrigerator today, you give him a present, a refrigerator, you see to it that they send along the sheet of instructions. You figure, what's in the sheet of instructions? You take the plug and you put it into the wall. Did he figure that one out? Yeah. Okay. What else? If it's hot, you go up. I mean, he could figure it out, yeah. But you send along a sheet of instructions because yeah, maybe something will go wrong, etc. Yeah. But if you give a guy a car, you give him a handbook, maintenance. If he doesn't look in the maintenance handbook and he goes off driving, one day he comes in, he says, "You wanted to kill me. What's the matter?" His brakes gave. What's the matter? He never looked at the hydraulic fluid in the brakes. Yeah. So he says, "You will try to kill me." Say, "Mishugan, I gave you a handbook. Why didn't you check it out? You know, every 1,000 miles, 5,000 miles, you got to check it out, right?" His engine burns out. He says, "What are you doing to me? Give me a car. It doesn't work. What? No oil." There was a handbook. But if you give him a 747, you know that's a real matona, right? 747, yeah? You know what that comes with? A little library. A little library, you understand? And every time they take one of those 747s up, yeah, they go through a whole checkout system. You understand? Everything. They check out all the instructions. They have instructions to check out everything. Never mind how much they checked it out before. Why? Because this is a powerful thing. If you don't check it out, we can get killed. The Rebbe Shalom gave us a whole planet, a universe. He gave it to us. His genius, he gave us a manual. A little manual. I mean, otherwise it would take, yeah? A little manual is a chumash, and there's a shas, and a shulchan aruch. It's a little manual how to do it, yeah? If you live according to the manual, and you pay attention, you check everything out, oh boy, what a world. If you don't, boy, can it kill you. People jump off the roof, you know? Oh, can this world kill you? Yeah. They go crazy, oh, can this world kill you? They can be miserable, boy, this world, if you don't know how to use it, murderous. Doesn't mean that it isn't a gift. You got to learn how to use it. Now this makes sense to people. But it changes their view of what Judaism is about. It changes it. And you've got to get that across. That's an anocha, that's an A. They should go away, they shouldn't walk around saying, "We're the zombies, ritual." If you don't understand what it's about, it's a ritual. If you understand what it's about, it's instructions for living. You tell them, you put a mezuzah up on your door, most of them will say, yeah, we put a mezuzah. Yeah, what's the matter with you? Rituals. I put a mezuzah up on the door, it's to remind me to love God. It's to remind me. I know what it says in there. For me, it's not a ritual. I get a lot of mileage out of it. It's instructions for living. For you, it's a ritual. What are you doing? You don't believe in God, you put up something. What is it? What does it do on your door? A lot of them have them on the door. Or they wear it. What is it, an amulet? You guys are into witchcraft. We're not. We know what it's about. All right, that's Chaim. That's to give them an awareness. So, you say the second thing that we want to teach him is brocha. Rabbi Shalom says, Rei, ani neisim b'nechem ayoyim es ha-brocha ve'es ha-klola. So you want to show them that Torah is a brocha, a blessing, which means plenty, which means enjoy, have. So A of this is, as far as this evening, is that after you tell them about the fact, and this is a chelik of pleasure, you tell them, look, Judaism teaches you how to have pleasure. We say the Rabbi Shalom created us, he's our Father in heaven. He wants us to have pleasure. Our chiyuv, our obligation is to have pleasure. That's what he created us for. And every human being wants pleasure. Every human being. Do you know somebody who says, I'm not interested in having pleasure? No such thing. So the Rabbi Shalom wants us to have pleasure, and every human being has pleasure, wants pleasure. Then what's the problem? What goes wrong? So we Jews call it chet, which means a mistake. A mistake. And the Chazal say, Ein odom choyte ela shenichnes b'ruach shtus. You got to be crazy to waste your time. You got to be crazy not to learn Torah Hashem Tzvokos. You got to be crazy to stand up in prayer and tefillah lefnei b'ir olam kuloi and forget where you're holding. Meshuga. We're crazy. We're out of it. Ein odom choyte el shenichnes b'ruach shtus. There's an insanity. And the spirit of insanity is waiting for all of us. Yeah. But chet means a blunder. Lahti et amatara is to miss. It's a miss. It's a blunder. It's a mistake. And the biggest mistake, and this is what you got to teach him, as far as broch is concerned, the biggest mistake that people make is they mistake pleasure with lust. That's the biggest mistake. And you have to spell it out for them. Pleasure with lust. There's pleasure and there's lust. And your first opportunity will come when a fellow will say to you, what do you mean that we're created for pleasure? What do you mean that all that I... You tell him, look, all that you are motivated by, all that you can do, I'll prove to you you're created for pleasure. You tell them, I'll prove to you you're created for pleasure. What's the evidence? The evidence is very simple. If there is a creator, then he put the design into the object. If you ask a human being, any human being, what is this for? A pen, what is it for? He'll tell you, it's for writing. You say, how do you know it's for writing? Maybe it's a toothpick, yeah? Says it won't do the job, it's no good for a toothpick. Well, maybe it's a safety pin, you know? Won't do the job, it's not a safety pin. Well, maybe it's a, won't do the job, it was made to write, and that's what it was made for. That's what it does, that's what it was made for. So you ask him, tell me, what do human beings do? If the Rabbi Shalom created us, what do? We are pleasure seekers. That's what we do. We are pleasure seekers. So he says, what are you talking about? I can do something altruistically. I'm not bound to have pleasure. I can do somebody a favor. I'm not bound to have pleasure. You say, nah, Reina, that's what we're telling you. You make mistakes. Doing someone a favor, that's pleasure. The other stuff that you have on your mind, that's lust. You're mistaking pleasure for lust. Now, how do you tell the difference? Now, remind you, if you're doing someone a favor, are you doing them a favor because you want to? You're doing them a favor because you're going to get to Olam Haba? You're doing it a favor because it's your pleasure? Why do you want to do it? Check it out. Because it's your pleasure. It's your pleasure to be like the Rebbeinu Shleilo. I'm native. It's a pleasure. Check it out. You got to check that out yourself. That's our pleasure. Chesed is a pleasure. It's a pleasure of a human being to do chesed. It's a pleasure. It's a pella. Look, I see. What do you say? It's a pella or is it true? It's a pleasure. Otherwise, why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? Because you got to. Why do you have to? Because otherwise, what? You won't get tzchai, you'll get a nainish. Why is the Rebbeinu Shlom telling us that we have to? Why does he want us to do it? Because it's our pleasure. So you tell him that's pleasure. The other stuff is lust. What's the difference between pleasure and lust? You got to tell the difference, otherwise you're going to make the same mistake all over again, all the time. You'll mistake lust for pleasure, and you'll never get out of that mistake. First, you have to define. You have to define. Pleasure is eternal. The pleasure is of the soul. The pleasure is eternal. What do you mean eternal? Pleasure, if you did something nice, if you saw, if you learned, if you accomplished, if you overcame, whenever you think of it, it's the same pleasure. Pleasure is forever. Lust is a moment. It's over. Pleasure is with, it's the neshama. It's with awareness. It's being alive. It's with chayim. Lust blacks you out. Blacks you out. You become an animal. Dark. No awareness. Pleasure gives you energy. When a person has pleasure, when he has simcha, when he has happiness, when he has accomplishment, when he's successful, when he feels as el tuf kiton, he can run a mile. And he goes and learns another blat gemara. He's got energy. Lust leaves you depressed. Indulge. The body takes over. You feel a shmata. You feel no good. And it leaves you depressed. So you always have to check out whether it's pleasure or lust. What will happen after you have it? Will it leave you energized? Will it be with a consciousness? Will it be forever? Or is it the other stuff? Lust. Don't make mistakes. Don't make mistakes. That's the first thing you got to tell them. The second thing you got to tell them is, pleasure is of the soul, lust is of the body. When the neshama gets into it, that's pleasure. So we don't say, in Torah, we don't say that lust, that the body's desire is ra. No. But if you do it as a means to an end, if you see the tachlis, the constructive purpose with awareness, then it's pleasure. A tainuk of Shabbos, if you have a tachlis in it. If you do it as an end in itself to satisfy the body, then it's lust and it destroys you. You've got to understand, you've got to teach it to them. They're confused. They want pleasures, they want lust, they don't know how to weigh it out, they don't know that anything is bad or anything is good. You understand that? You've got to teach it to them. You've got to teach it to them.
They play a game of tennis, right? So they have a pleasure out of that. Right?
That's true.
So, but then it doesn't leave them depressed. It leaves them happy.
So, you don't understand. Why, if they play a game of tennis, they have pleasure out of it. Yeah? And if you just sit there, waving the tennis racket, waving the tennis racket, then it's annoying. Then you're pining in them. What's the difference? What do they do? They ran, and they hit the ball, and they... What do they do? But the idea is that there is a feeling of power, which is one of the pleasures of the neshama, yeah, memshola. I have control of my arm. I coordinate my arm with my eye, and I hit the ball. I have a grace of movement, which is shenkite, beauty. So I've done something. It was a beautiful game. It's a neshama pleasure. It is a neshama pleasure. The problem is that it's a sefer angresser. But it's not the same as the other things that they're doing. It's not the norgy. It's not being wiped out. It's a little more constructive. Always get them to play tennis rather than that other stuff. You know what I mean? Send them out to play tennis. You know, tennis! rather than the other stuff. Yeah. The thing is that the Rebbe Nishon created us for the greatest pleasure. He wants us to go first class. Yeah, that's the result. Otherwise, fine. Why not? Yeah. He wants us to go first class, get the biggest. That's the opposite. You understand? Compared to what you can do, what's this? What about music? I have pleasure for music. It's from the neshama. Music is shara negina. It's from the highest. Yeah, it has a shaykhis. But then there's the music. And there's the rock and roll. The rock and roll is an audience. It wipes you out. They can crack. They can feel. If they can't feel, they can't crack. It's just like... They become like a chaya, like an animal. Pardon me if there's somebody who likes rock and roll. Pardon me. Well, but, I mean, just ask yourself what happens to you. I mean, it wipes them out. It wipes them. You can't even think when it's around. Yeah. Can't think when it's around. Oh God, sorry, call me the boy. That turns it into pleasure.
What happens if somebody smokes?
No, my boy. You know that's no good. We don't have a leg to stand on. I only tell them. I just want to prove to you that I'm a human being. So, it's a question of priority as to how much it'll cost you to stop smoking. You know? Please, let's go on. Okay, so B of this is that you want to get across to them again. They are Americans, they're living in American society. And we are Americans. And you've got to get it out of yourself. So you say the biggest mistake that is current in American society is that you're decadent. You're decadent. You ever hear that Americans are decadent? They don't want to go to war anymore. Yimach Shemo, Hitler said that don't worry about the Western democracies. They won't go to fight. It was 15 years too soon. That's all. Now they don't want to fight. That's decadence. Yeah. So everybody's talking about the Western world is decadent. They don't exactly know, you know, they don't know what they mean by decadence. You say, I'll prove it to you that you are decadent. I'll prove it to you that you are decadent. Friendly-like, you know, don't challenge him, right? But at the same time, look, Chava, we're decadent. He says, okay, well, show me. So you ask him a question. And I want everybody to check it out himself. You say, tell me, what's the opposite of pain? And every one of them will answer, pleasure. That's what they answer, pleasure. And then you say to them, my friend, that proves it. That proves it. That's the definition of decadence. Why? I'll explain it to you. Because the opposite of pain, really, the opposite of pain is no pain. The opposite of pain is comfort. The opposite of pain is comfort. To think that the ultimate pleasure means comfort. The ultimate pleasure, you know what an Americana, the ultimate pleasure is? A waterbed with a hookah. That's the ultimate pleasure, that's what they're looking for. That is the definition of decadence. In reality, if you want pleasure, you have to pay with pain for pleasure. Lefum sara agra. No way. You want pleasure? We gotta remember this. Lefum sara agra. There's no other way. You want pleasure? You've gotta pay with pain. You've gotta pay with painful pleasure. No other way. Why? I mean, a guy can have a pleasure. Yeah. If he doesn't make an effort to think who gave it to him and why he's drinking it and how it will affect him and that it's a brocha, then it's lust. He has no pleasure. You can finish an ice cream cone and forget what flavor it was. If you don't make an effort to pay attention, to put your mind awareness into it, you had no pleasure. You had no pleasure. But you say, to equate pleasure with comfort is decadence. You've got to understand that pleasure requires pain. That hasn't convinced him yet. but you've got across an idea. Then you tell him, I'll tell you, my friends. And you have to mean it. The United States is so decadent that they don't have to have the barbarians invade. If the barbarians will have patience, will just have patience, 50 years, 60 years, the United States will disappear all on its own. Why? Because in the United States of America, they have minus population growth. The thing is that barbarians aren't going to wait. Yeah? But they are so decadent, they don't want to have children. They don't want to have children. Why? Because if you ask anyone, is it pleasurable to have children? Is children one of the great pleasures in life? And anyone, even if he doesn't want children, will say, yeah, when people have it, their children is their greatest pleasure. Anybody who has children, it's his greatest pleasure. So then why don't you want some? Too much pain. Anybody will tell you, Tsar Gidul Bonum. What a pain. Too much pain. Do you understand? It's not a question that children aren't pleasurable. Everybody knows that children are pleasurable. Do you understand that? And everybody knows that children are a heck of a lot of pain. A heck of a lot of pain. Tsar Gidul Bonum, we know. It's nothing like it. Yeah? But everybody out there knows, what? Children tie you down, you got a diaper, So if a guy tells you, look, my friend, I don't mind, I'm going to have some children, I don't mind, I'm going to have some children. You say, oh, so you mean that children are pleasurable, right? He says, yes, I think that children are pleasurable, right? So you say, how many children are you going to have? He says, two. He said, why don't you have 12? He says, oh, no, not 12. Not 12. You say, what's the matter? Too much pleasure? So he knows the score, you understand? And it drives it home. Now you can show him the whole process of rationalization. You can show him, and that's a C of this. You know, this is another aspect of it. And I don't know if you write it down, it can help you, and it can help them, because it's a whole process. We say, Elokim Boreis Odom Yosho, Vein Bikshu Lehem Nach Cheshbonis Rabbis. Rationalization. You know, you say, I know a man, and that's me, that I was one of, Baruch Hashem, there were 7 children in my family, but all the Yiddish and Mishpochas, we were proverbial. We had Groysa Mishpoch, we had large family. So when I was a youngster, I asked my friends, how many children are you going to have? They said, 2 children. 2. I said, what's the matter? Why only 2 children? You can quote me. You can say, a rabbi once told me. Yeah. I said, why only 2 children? And they used to say, because I want to give my children every advantage. Every advantage. I want to get them a bicycle. I want to send them through college. In my day, when I was a kid, the Yiddish, the Jewish families, 7 brothers would band together to send an 8th brother through medical school, you know. Nobody could afford the gold, but if brothers got together, they sent the brother through school, through college, a grace zach, yeah. So I want to give all my children every advantage, send them to camp, a bicycle, whatever they need. If I have more than 2, I won't be able to do it. And in those days, I used to say to them, tell me, you have 10 brothers and sisters, I'll give you $100,000. $100,000 for one of them. You'll lose one of your brothers and sisters. Not chas v'chol, they're going to die. Anything bad is going to happen to them. All they'll do is they'll move over to California. You'll lose track of him. You'll never see him the rest of your life. You'll never see your brother. Would you take $100,000? Now, don't try it today. Don't try it today. But when I was a kid, it was a safe bet. They said, what, are you crazy? I'm not going to see my brother the rest of my life for $100,000. Ridiculous. They say, ridiculous. Yeah? I say, take a look. Your parents left you 10 brothers and sisters. That's $1 million apiece. Because each one of you has 10 brothers and sisters. Right? They left you $1 million apiece. Do you expect to give your child that kind of an advantage? Do you understand that this shows them the rationalization? Where is pleasure? And where is lust? Where it is. All right, the years go by, and you ask a young man, I asked a young man, how many children are you going to have? He says, 2. I say, why only 2? He says, well, I don't think it's fair to take more than my fair share of the ecology. You ever hear a guy? He doesn't think it's fair. He's a big nadvin now. He's a meisa nefesh for the whole world. He doesn't take more than his fair share of the ecology. Yeah? Two is his fair share. You know, wife and two. Yeah. So I say to him, my friend, you know what? Give up your car. Give up your heating system. Give up your refrigerator. You know, you can get ice. You know, in the old days, they didn't have, you know, give up your home. Every American uses something like 1,000 times what an African uses or an Indian uses of the ecology. How many times? I don't know. Anybody ever made a study of it? You have it, and you can afford 50 kids. Do you see again? What is your priority? What is your pleasure? Children or your car? Your fair share of the ecology, you're willing to sacrifice children. But not a double car or a triple car, no. Yeah. Not the convenience of driving down the street. Not the comfort. The pleasure, yeah, I'll give up the pleasure. Not the comfort. Make sense? All right, the years go by. You ask a guy, how many children you're going to have? And you'll hear it today, it's still prevalent. The guy says, I don't think I'm going to have any children. I say, what's the matter? Why aren't you going to have any children? He says, I don't think it's fair to bring children into this miserable world. Did you ever hear that one? Heard it, yeah. I don't think it's fair you bring them into such a messed up world. It's a terrible world. So then you say to him, my friend, if you think this world is such a terrible place, I'll buy you a Saturday night special. You can leave it. You don't have to stick around. Being such an awful inconvenience being here, why don't you quit? You want to hold on? To what? Well, the years go by. And right now, my friends, I ask young men who are coming through in Yerushalayim today, I say, how many kids are you going to have? They say, me? Who's getting married? I say, what's the matter? Don't you want a wife, you know, children, a family, a home? I say, who? I can spend all the money on myself. They're up front, you understand? Now they're honest, straightforward. But they don't know what life is about. If he doesn't want to get married, he doesn't want children. They don't know what pleasure is. Do you see them? They're into comfort, not pleasure. Watch out that they don't get to you. Vefum tzara agla. According to the pain is the reward. There is no such thing as being nene. There is no such thing as being nene without pain. Without paying with yegiah. You have to pay with yegiah. And every yegiah that you do in order to be nene, the shem shemayim, okay. See if this is that there is another aspect that you tell him about pleasure. You tell him like this, look, my friend. Pleasure or pain. You know, pain is not the opposite of pleasure, but pain is a price that you pay for pleasure. So you tell him this. You've got to appreciate that when we keep our eye on the pain, we have no pleasure. When we keep our eye on the pleasure, we have no pain. It's in everything you do. In everything you do. You give him a mushroom. You give him an example. You say, listen, you know, you take a guy, you know what basketball is, they don't know what basketball is. You put him on a basketball court, you take away the ball. Take away the ball and put him on the basketball court. Right? And you say, go ahead, run, jump, back and forth. You pay him $10 an hour. It's good pay. $20 an hour. How many guys will be there for an hour? Inhuman punishment. This is an awful place. Sadistic. This is terrible. These people are awful, right? Why don't you just run back and forth, jump? Yeah. What do? You give them a ball and you set them out on the basketball court? A machaya. It's a machaya, right? They can hardly walk anymore. They're sweating. And they say, let's rest for half an hour. We'll play another game, right? Or 10 minutes we'll rest. You don't know about that? They're ready to play another 10 minutes. Just get their autumn back. You know, they put their neshama back into the goof and they're ready to play another game. For what? For free. How come? What's the difference? Very simple. You keep your eye on the ball, on the pleasure. It's a nice shot. It's beautiful control, nice play, and it's pleasure. You don't even know that you were your gaya. On the other hand, if you take a kid and you take him to the most beautiful place in the world, if he doesn't want to go, you say, you got to come to me to the circus. You know that he can be miserable at the circus. Right? He says, no, you made me come, you made me come. If you keep your eye on I don't want to, you can be miserable in the most beautiful place in the world. Can you imagine you go on a picnic in the most beautiful place and you have wonderful things to eat and everything is good? Can you imagine the guy who makes the whole place miserable because what? They forgot the salt. Oh, well, the salt is a serious affair, but he makes the whole place miserable because what? Because they forgot the ice. Well, the ice is a serious affair, but he makes the whole place miserable because he broke his shoelace. You know such people? That's us. Those people are us. The Rebbeinu Shleilim gave us a beautiful world. He gave you eyes, he gave you hands, he gave you feet, he gave you brothers, he gave you atira, he gave you... He said, Bonai, most beautiful world for us. And what happens? We don't have salt. We don't have... That's us. Do you see that? You don't see it. If you keep your eye on the pain, on what you don't feel, what you lack, what went wrong, Skefela, you don't have no pleasure. You keep your eye on the pleasure, on Ashreinu Matrif Chalkeinu. What's pain? It's part, this is what you pay, yeah. We're eating, this is what we pay. Ah, right. To be awake, you have to struggle. You have to gear in order to find the Metziah. Lo yagati mitzosi al taim. And this is what you got to get across. Okay, let's take the rest of it, take a little break, and we'll go the rest of the time and we'll go into the mitzvah of the moon.
You have been listening to HAudio.com. For information about our online services, visit our website. To contact one of our representatives, write to HAudio@HAudio.com. Shalom from Jerusalem.